It's time for school days. Hope for moms and dads of school-aged kids.
I tell parents, you're like a training wheel on a bike. Your job isn't to make the bike move. Your job is to keep the bike upright.
Those of us who are the true educators, we really want to be given the opportunity to educate the whole child.
We can get free college degrees based on all of the opportunities that are out here and available to our students.
Oftentimes, as parents, I think we want to protect our kids, but I think one of the greatest gifts we can give them is allowing them to experience adversity. Yeah.
Here's your host, Danita Bailey.
Well, welcome to School Days, Help for Moms and Dads of School-Aged Kids. October 20th through 26th is Safe Schools Week. I gotta be honest, this is a tough episode to prepare for. My entire family goes to school every morning. My husband is a school teacher and my kids go to public school, so when you hear headlines about school shootings, it can really weigh on you. Not to mention, we recently had an incident in my son's school where a classmate brought a gun, although unloaded, to school to show his friends. And this was, as my son tells me, right after students were told not to do this. So today we're going to talk to officials here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area about how they're tackling the school safety issue. School safety legislation varies widely from state to state, but our goal for this conversation is to inform parents and get you thinking about what's happening regarding safety in your own kids' schools. Things have really changed significantly since we were students. With bullying not only on campus, but also reaching into our homes through devices, scary headlines of school violence, and drugs and prescription medication abuse in schools, there's really a lot to consider and a lot to protect our kids from. Before we go any further, let me just say that it does take a village. If you hear a great parent tip or nugget of advice, share it with your parent friends. Facebook it, Instagram it, tweet it, link it in, and add the hashtag SchoolDaysShow or hashtag IAmSchoolDays. And also, we want you to be a part of the show. So if you have any questions or comments, give us a call and talk to us live on air at 214-431-5062 or head to our Facebook page at Noggin Foundation, that's N-O-G-G-I-N, and find our Facebook Live. You can drop us a question or a comment there. So let's get to our guests. Our first guest today is Chief Tracy Aaron. Chief Aaron is married, celebrating 35 years, and is the father of three grown children and a grandfather of two. He has served in various capacities over his 30 years of service to the city of Mansfield, including a patrol, hostage negotiations, mounted patrol, special assignments within the Criminal Investigation Division, SWAT technical support, as well as the chief marshal for 4 years. Chief Aaron graduated from the Texas A&M Police Academy, holds a Master of Peace Officer license, a bachelor's degree in business administration, and a master's in criminal justice from Tarleton State University. Chief Aaron was appointed Chief of Police of Mansfield in August of 2014. He leads a police department that is responsible for 223 employees, comprised of 105 sworn officers, correction officers, as well as civilian employees. So, welcome.
Well, good morning. That sounds a lot better than I thought it did, so thanks.
Thanks for joining us. Also with us this morning is Chief Jimmy Womack. He has more than 41 years of combined service in law enforcement and public education. Chief Womack has served the Mansfield ISD since 2012 and was named Chief of Police on February 1st, 2013. Prior to his promotion, Chief Womack served as Director of Transportation and Assistant Chief of Police. Chief Womack began his service in public education in 1996 in the Arlington ISD as a classroom teacher, instructing students in criminal justice and law enforcement. Chief Womack is a graduate of the Institute for Law Enforcement Administration and holds a Master Peace Officer Certification and an Instructor Certification from the Texas Commission on Law Enforcement. Chief Womack and his wife Lisa have a son, Brad, and a daughter, Haley. They are proud grandparents of three grandsons and one granddaughter. I love it when people talk about their grandkids in their profile.
I can't forget my grandkids.
No.
Hey, they could forget me, but they can't forget the grandkids.
That's right. Lisa is a retired chief of police and currently the owner of LGW Consulting, LLC. So thank you guys both for joining us.
Absolutely.
Thank you for asking.
Yeah. So let's go ahead and jump right in. We've got a whole lot of questions, and the time is going to fly, like I told you. So Mansfield is unique in that it has both a local police department and a police department for the local school district. And there's really not a lot of situations like that in the DFW area where there's both. What are the benefits of having a district that has a police department?
You know, when you have your own police department, and I'll kind of walk around the question here.
Sure.
We're in multiple jurisdictions. We have students that live in Mansfield, we have students that live in Arlington, and we have students that live in Grand Prairie. So what it is, the district decided 26 years ago to start their own police department, and they felt like it could better serve the community, being our kids and parents, by having their own police department. But when you do that, then it requires us to partner with, like, Tracy and I, Chief Aaron. I'll refer to him as Tracy in here because we've been friends for years. But develop partnerships not only with the local PDs, but, you know, with the cities. And so, but it gives you the district ownership, the kids. It's, you know, we concentrate on the children and the parents.
Yeah, can I add something to that?
Sure.
The first thing I had to comment is that 26 years ago, wow, that seems a lot longer than I thought of it. But, you know, I remember those days. I remember the days that I was a patrol officer and I was fielding calls at the ISD.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? From our vantage point, what I see is the expertise that the ISD police department brings to the picture to mm-hmm. our community. And that is not only just the expertise to dealing with juveniles on a daily basis,
right.
but also the intimate relationships that they have, that they the firsthand knowledge that they bring to the table about each and every student.
Mm-hmm. So how does the school district police department kind of collaborate with the local police department?
You know, one of the things that, and Tracy and I talk on a fairly regular basis, and occasionally I can even get him to try to buy me lunch, but that's occasionally.
He seems to forget his wallet every time we go to lunch. And I think that's a trick that you learn as you get older, obviously. But he's learned it well.
Yeah, and what we see more is our officers communicating back and forth because of the students, the parents, the community. You know, we have the kids 8 to 10 hours a day, and sometimes even longer. And then when they go home, if something that's involving his folks, then we can communicate back and forth. Our officers have ownership the way ours is set up at a particular campus, and so they know all those kids, all those parents, and they can communicate back and forth with the Mansfield PD officers in that area. It's really about communication.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about building that trust between the departments, and
right.
and we do that on a daily basis. With just like Jimmy said, with our members of our departments being able to have a collaborative effort on a daily basis to know exactly who to call and actually who to talk to, particularly about different incidents. You know, at the end of the day, we're dealing with the same community.
Mm-hmm.
We live in the community that we police, and we're dealing with the same community. So it's really nice to have that relationship that we have.
Mm-hmm. And since you guys are working, you know, your population is going to be kids K through 12. Do you guys have specific training in child development and how kids think and things like that?
Yeah, the school-based policing, our officers have to do the same training any other police officer does, but then we have certain things that we want our officers to be aware of. It's dealing with juveniles, de-escalation, dealing with the parents. And so there's certain aspects of our training that may differ a little bit from Tracy's training with his guys. And so, it goes back, what I want is our officers developing that relationship with the kids at the campus. So those kids are comfortable walking up to that officer and saying, hey, here's what's going on, you know, or can you help me? I'll give you an example. I have a officer that was born in South Vietnam, and he has some Vietnamese kids at his school who are having a difficult time language-wise. And that officer actually sometimes at lunch will work with them during the lunch, and he's building that rapport because of that language barrier that they have with other kids, and he's working with them on an individual basis.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not all about the enforcement end, it's about the relationship building.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So what under what circumstances is the local police department brought in?
Go ahead, you want to start, Tracy?
Well, there's a few specialties that the Mansfield Police Department has that maybe the ISD has not ramped up into those areas, and whether it be an intense investigation or just different tools of the trade that makes us as a partner such a valuable partner to the ISD. And so on those particular instances, of course, Mansfield Police Department is going to be involved in it. You know, with the schools in the jurisdiction of Mansfield, we're going to be on a lot of different scenes, especially very critical incidents we're always going to be involved in.
Mm-hmm.
And we rely on them. Like I said, our officers focus on the relationship building, the working with the kids, whereas if, like he was talking about, a critical investigation, we'll collaborate together and make sure our people are working towards the common goal.
Mm-hmm.
What's really important is that you have to recognize that a particular incident could have spun up from something that happened in the community,
right,
or it could have happened at school, or it was an episode that carried across both of those. So we have to realize that that's happening, and so it's critically important that we work together.
Now, in developing emergency plans and making the school safer, do you guys collaborate with other districts and other police departments across the country, across the city?
Yes, ma'am. We work together with other districts. We work together with the emergency, like Tarrant County Emergency Services. We work with Tracy and his fire department, his police department. In fact, he has a staff member that sits on our safety committee. He assigned an assistant chief to sit on that safety committee, as well as there's someone from the fire department, and I believe the city also has an employee. So it's all, in an emergency situation, it's pretty much going to be all hands on deck.
Mm-hmm.
And if we have one of those, then we're going to have to rely on him as well as he's relying on us.
You know, it's not just an assistant chief, it's Dan Tripp, Assistant Chief Dan Tripp.
I'm sorry.
So we can actually use their names because those guys are incredible at what they do.
That is.
And so anytime we can talk about our staff members, because at the end of the day, they make us successful.
Mm-hmm.
And it's incredibly important that they see that. You know, another thing that we do is, and Jim and I both do this, is we belong to different associations. So Texas Police Chiefs Association, the IACP, International Chiefs of Police Associations. And what we get to do with that is we get to go and learn, go to conferences to see lessons learned.
Yeah.
And we build on those, and we actually dissect those and see the debriefings. So we get firsthand knowledge of what they learned on their particular instance, and we try to bring that back to our district.
And another part, when he said we're on the different organizations, I'm the past president of the Texas School District Police Chiefs Association, and I've been an active member for about the last 20 years. And so it's also, when you asked about school districts, that's another way we can collaborate. You know, I also sit on the International Association Chief of Police Juvenile Justice Committee, and we meet twice a year to discuss not only safety, but what can we do better to help kids navigate through the tough times of getting through school from mm-hmm. junior high school. And you know, you told us you had three kiddos. You understand.
Mm-hmm.
And Tracy and I have raised kids and now help them with grandkids. So it's, you know, but it's about everybody working together.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We have a couple of questions, actually. This is a teacher that I know that's has a question on our Facebook Live here. He wants to know, how do you build trust between school children of all ages and police in a climate when there might be immediate distrust?
You know, the and you know, you Tracy sees the same thing. If it is, what we want our officers to do is be able to sit down with the student. And so you try to learn what, if say it's a particular student or a group of students, the officer involvement, can that officer, you know, go to an athlete, maybe it's a group of athletes that are having an issue, maybe it's a group of kids at the lunchroom. We want our officers to be able to sit there and communicate with them and build that trust up. You know, talk to them about what's going on in the neighborhood.
You know, I think the bigger thing is what you're saying is communication. It's exactly right. And we got to look for opportunities to have a conversation. You know, and I tell my folks all the time, it takes us getting out of the car. We can't just drive around with our windows up and not have a conversation. And we have to purposely put ourselves in a position to have those conversations. You know, one of the things that I have to brag a little bit about the ISD that the ISD has done this year is they made a commitment to put a police officer on every campus.
Right.
And so to make that happen, that they had to partner with other agencies, Mansfield being one of them. So it gave us an opportunity to have some officers out on campuses and have conversations firsthand. So we look for those opportunities, and whenever they present themselves, we try to have those conversations because, you know, at the end of the day, you've already said it, we're parents, and the school kids need to realize that we have kids ourselves, and at the end of the day, that's our gift from God. That's the most important thing to us, is to make sure that those kids are raised properly, and we want to be involved in that to that end.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the most simple things that we do, our officers do, sorry about that, I talk with my hands.
I told you to put those in your pocket before we got started.
So is something simple that at our elementary schools, the officers go in the classroom and read a book to the students. Mm. And then it gives that opportunity for those students in that classroom to ask questions. You know, and so I do that several times a year, go to a classroom. I get invited and, you know, they give me a book to read, and I sit down with that group of, you know, first graders, second graders, whatever it may be. And it's reading that book and building that rapport, and then them having you ask, they'll ask you questions. Mm-hmm. And that kind of starts it rolling there.
Mm-hmm. We're talking to Chief Tracy Aaron and Chief Jimmy Womack. If you have any questions, please give us a call at 214-431-5062. We're also on Facebook Live at Noggin Foundation, N-O-G-G-I-N. And if you find our Facebook Live, then you can ask questions there as well. You mentioned that in Mansfield ISD, which is your jurisdiction, that the superintendent decided to put an officer on every campus. Mansfield ISD proposed a $3 million plan for improving school safety this year or last year. I think it was last year. What practices or strategies have been put into place to keep our kids safe, specifically in your district?
Well, you know, when you referred to the superintendent, it was a safety committee, the superintendent, mm-hmm. our school board, and the safety committee is like Chief Tripp's on it, other individuals, there's parents, there's students. So there were quite a few things that this committee vetted and vets and looks at and determines, okay, this is what we need to do. You know, we have what we want to, you want your schools to feel open, but yet you have to secure them. So we've spent, you know, there's funds that have been spent to make all the new modern bells and whistles, cameras, access control, you know, it's all the different things like that. And then, you know, visitor management systems. If you go to your child's school, you sign in and you have your ID, you're given a pass. When you sign in, it checks you as, you know, verifies you are the parent and so forth. So, and then the big thing was that the committee, like Tracy brought up, they felt like it was important to put a police officer on every campus. And so that's been a goal that was given to me to make it happen. And it started last school year, and we're slowly getting it where it needs to be. Yes, there are officers on every campus, but, you know, I have to rely on Tracy to help. Steve Dye from Grand Prairie, the chief of Grand Prairie, also helps. Mm-hmm. And we have to collaborate with the different agencies right now until we can staff it with just all MISD officers.
Mm-hmm. One of the aspects of the plan was to start using a social media monitoring system. So mm-hmm. tell me a little bit about that.
What that does is we have a company that's contracted out, and what they do is they monitor certain social media networks, and I'm not the social media person. Tracy may be, but
I thought you had a lot of experience in that.
No. What my kids give me, or my grandkids actually, but what that does is they look for, you know, when there's maybe a threat made or keywords are brought up in a conversation, then we will receive an alert on it. And so then the alerts come to myself and a several people. And then we, if it's something that's, you know, in the neighborhood, then we'll work with Tracy's folks. If it's something, you know, because a lot of the social media stuff is not necessarily happening during the day at school.
Right.
It's sure. at night. And we may, in fact, they may get it, you know, and let notify us about it.
You know, it's. I think what you have to realize is that crime fighting is an ever-evolving sport. I mean, that is. I mean, it's just that it changes. It changes every day with technology changes and technology challenges. It is a constant changing atmosphere. And so I think one of the things that you see a lot of police departments doing now is trying to stay on top of the cutting edge. What is the next new device that we need to help us fight that crime, and whether or not it's in our community or it's in our school districts? And so we're continually challenged to what is it that we need next. And, you know, we're fortunate that we're able to, most of the times, facilitate that.
Mm-hmm. As a mom, I'm curious, with the social media monitoring, what happens if a credible threat is identified? What's kind of the procedure there?
Well, first of all,
say on Facebook, maybe.
Yep. Yeah, if it's a threat, then we'll investigate it. And it may be us investigating it, and it may be Tracy investigating it or his folks, and then we determine if it's credible. And then if it is credible, then we'll deal with it. If it's not credible, then we still have to deal with it one way or the other, because how many people have seen the threat? Who put it out there? Who did they send it to? What was the social media platform that they put it on? Mm-hmm. So we have to take every threat or every situation like that and treat it as credible until we can verify that it's not.
You know, in so many cases that, you know, that if a threat comes in, we're going to work that to the end. You know, and sometimes what it's going to mean is there's going to be a police officer knocking on your door. If there was any type of threat or what someone else deemed as a threat, that means that we're not done until we talk to that individual. And so many times that if we can identify that person, that's what's going to happen.
And what he said, we may be knocking on somebody's door at 3:00 in the morning, because that may be when the threat's been brought to our attention. And you know, kids, it's amazing to me that kids at 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning are on the different social media platforms with their friends. And so we have to investigate it all the way till the end and take, if it's a threat, then sometimes there's consequences for those threats, even though it wasn't necessarily credible. The person, well, I really didn't mean to do that,
right.
but we have to treat it that way.
And there's so many different platforms now. You know, it's mm-hmm. it's not just Facebook or Twitter. Yeah. It's all of the new stuff that the kids come up with that were always challenged of, hey, what is the next thing that they're communicating on?
So we talked a little bit about the school resource officers, we call them SROs, right? So this is kind of new as of the last maybe 20 years. The first incidence of them was in Michigan, I think, that actually, and they really were just to, you know, help help with crime situations. But since Columbine, there's been an increased presence of SROs on campus. So just kind of talk about, you've talked about they come in and read. What are some more of the responsibilities of SROs on campuses?
My officers and ours, we don't consider them SROs.
Okay.
In the school district policing, we're school-based police officers. SROs are the ones that we generally contract out. You'll hear us refer to Chief Eric Tracy's folks as SROs. But it's the same. It's just a terminology.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think of a best way.
Well, let me help you with that a little bit, because the mission should never change for that police officer on campus.
Right.
The number one mission is security of our students. Yeah. That's our biggest asset that's there, is our students and our teachers. And we want to make sure that they're safe. And so to that end, we don't want to distract our police officers with other duties that take them away from that. So when Jimmy was talking about, we're going to have an officer come in and read to the students, that's going to be a secondary officer that's responsible for that, because the officer there that's assigned for security detail, he cannot be distracted from that post nor that mission. And the mission is to take care of our kids and our teachers.
Yeah, and the officers, and I'll give you a good example. If we get a traffic complaint at a school, imagine that. Somebody's complaining about traffic around their school.
Mm-hmm.
We generally refer it to Tracy's folks to take care of. He's got a traffic unit. They're great. They're on the spot. They take care of it for us, because we don't want to lose the focus of being on that campus. If we're not on that campus, then we can't take care of the safety of the kids. And so that allows us to communicate back and forth and work. You know, his guys will take care of the stuff in the neighborhood around and what have you, and allows us to concentrate on what our goal is, and it's keeping our children safe.
Do your officers handle any training and teaching of students?
Yes, and they do. There's actually a new law that requires that every senior, I think it started last year, had to have a police interaction class, and it actually, the officers, that's one of the classes they teach at the high school. But we're available. Tracy's people are available. Arlington PD, Grand Prairie PD. It's kind of a big partnership.
Sure.
Because there may be something. There was a officer in Arlington who works a lot with alcohol impaired drivers, DWIs, and she will come to the schools and actually work and teach a class and talk about the, you know, kids. And they do it around prom time, so you know, mm-hmm. she does, and she'll come to our schools and she'll teach a class or a group of kids about, you know, stay away from alcohol. Here's what happens if you do that. And so it's kind of this, everybody has to work together.
And you said it was a police interaction class, so they teach them, you know, if you get pulled over by an officer,
yes,
this is how you should behave.
Well, it's what to expect.
Okay.
If you get pulled over by police officers, here's what to expect. Because if you think about it, and I'll go back to me back in high school, my first interaction with a police officer was, you know, a traffic stop. I got stopped in a school zone, and I can remember it to this day. And so that was, you know, you go back and you think about, when was the first time you had interaction with a police officer? And of course, Tracy, he had a lot of interactions.
You know, whenever you were telling that story, it made me think that I envisioned you on a buggy with a horse dragging it in a school zone whenever you were talking about that story. And I was thinking, how is that relevant to what we're talking about today? But wow.
You didn't know you were going to get so much comedy.
Y'all are
out
a comedy team. Y'all need to go on the road.
Wow.
I'm not sure about
I didn't know where you were going with that story, but I appreciate it.
But that's what it is. It's a what students can expect if they're stopped by a police officer. Mm-hmm. And it's really a great idea. And so especially in the, you know, with social media and the community and the way things are today, to have that, you know, that interaction right there.
You know, for years we've done a program called Put It Down, Save a Life. And that was an effort that was done with the Mansfield Police Department and ISD. And what it was really, we did it around prime time as well. And what we did with that is we brought CareFlight in. We recreated an accident scene and all of these different kinds of things, so that, you know, what we're really focusing on is drinking and driving around the prime time and trying to promote that, hey, this could happen. It could happen to just anybody. And it was absolutely a great program, and it was a good program for its time. But again, just like anything else, it's one of those that we have to think about new ways that we can communicate that story.
Mm-hmm. In what ways do you guys involve parents in prevention?
You know, one of the things that we try to do is, you know, our job is to educate students, mm-hmm. but we also have to educate the parents. And so I'll tell you something we're real big on is and I don't know if you're a member, but if you aren't, I encourage you, PTA, mm-hmm. where your kids go to school. And so what we'll do is we'll go out and we'll talk to the PTA groups or the parent groups, and we'll do a presentation, we'll answer questions. So we're trying to, again, it's all about collaboration and communication, and trying to let them know, hey, we're here. You know, we sometimes see your children more at school during the day than you see them in the evening. So, you know, and here's what we're about. And so it's important that we have that open line of communication. But, you know, a lot of parents they're working parents. And so it's kind of difficult sometimes to reach out there. You know, we do make things available on our website. There's tabs that parents can go to and pull up and maybe a question. I'll get emails on a fairly regular basis from parents. And what I try to do is I don't like to answer those questions in an email. What I like to do is talk to those parents. Mm-hmm. I'll call them on the phone. They can, you know, schedule an appointment and come by and visit. I think it's very important to communicate with the parents about what we're all about.
Yeah.
You know, and I think another point is that you have to remember that we're a 24-hour operation. You know, there's always an opportunity to talk to a police officer. And there's plenty of times that if our officers encounter a juvenile after hours, the parents are going to get a phone call. They should always get that phone call. And I encourage that because I want the parents to understand what's going on that they probably don't know about. And it could just be that we've caught this kid out walking around at night, or it could be that he's getting in trouble for something. But we want the parents to be involved in that, and so we want to have that conversation. And I agree with you. I'd much rather have that conversation face-to-face or even over the phone opposed to a text message or an email back and forth. You lose too much in communication in that, and I really want to have that face-to-face.
Mm-hmm. We are talking to Chief Tracy Aaron and Chief Jimmy Womack from Mansfield, Texas. If you have any questions, feel free to give us a call. We'd love to hear from you. Our number is 214-431-5062, or find us on our Facebook Live at Noggin Foundation. That's N-O-G-G-I-N, and you can type in some questions. So I mentioned earlier in my intro that things are so much different than when I was growing up. And I remember when my daughter, who was in kindergarten at the time, told me that she experienced an active shooter drill. They probably didn't call it that, mm-hmm. but I was really taken aback because it just wasn't a concern when I was in school. And I just wondered how much she actually understood about what was happening. So tell us a little bit about what students are taught and how they're prepared to respond to emergencies like that.
Well, one of the things that we do in Mansfield is we do drills every month. Some type of drill. It could be a fire drill, it could be a lockdown, lockout type drill, or it could be look at the weather. It hit Dallas this week. It could be a bad weather drill. Mm-hmm. And so And then we, you know, when we do these drills, then the teachers will generally explain why they're doing them and what's going on. And so, you know, and we try to make sure the drills are realistic. You know, we just don't want to, I'll give you an example, like for a fire alarm drill, let's use it as an example. We don't just ring a bell, they'll go pull a pull station and set it off, and then the students will, you know, respond appropriately. And it just, it's sad that we have to do drills like we do now, but it's just the way times are. And so it's very important that we do these and do them on a regular basis. In fact, there's actual legislation now that requires drills to be conducted.
Mm-hmm.
And so we do them on a regular basis, drills, audits, you know, and communication with the students. And the good thing is there's always officer or officers on campus when these drills, since we have an officer on a campus, there's always an officer there. And when there are lockdown drills and some of those drills, we'll send other officers over to assist, a supervisor, the officer in charge of emergency management. I'll even go sometimes to, because I want to see what the kids are doing and what the right. what the school's doing.
You know, I think you made a great point whenever you said it takes a village, because it truly does. It's not just what the kids learn in school, but it's also what they learn at home. We had a surreal moment whenever my granddaughter was telling me that she had an active shooter drill at her school. She attends a Fort Worth school, and first and second grade. That was a surreal moment for me as a police officer that has to really think about, man, I never had to do that whenever I was in school, but I'm glad that they're doing it, because it must be done, and we have to train our kids. But it's also we also need to be training them at home. So it's the same things that we taught years and years ago, stranger danger. It sounds crazy nowadays, but you know what the reality is if you ask your kids, hey, what does a stranger look like, they're probably not going to be able to tell you, because you haven't had that training with them. You know, we laugh about this today, that I had a security code for each one of my kids. So if I sent someone else to school to pick them up, they wouldn't have had to know the password.
Right.
And I taught my kids those passwords whenever they were kindergarten. And my 26-year-old son still remembers that password today. And it's one of those things that you have to have those boundaries for your kids, and you have to be reinforcing those at home of just what does a stranger look like? Mm-hmm. You know, it's not a guy in a mask. It could be a guy that's in the line with you at Target. It's all those different kinds of people that put themselves in a position that then causes a threat to either you, your family, or your kids. And so we have to be having those conversations with our kids, and we have to be real about that. What does that really mean?
So as a parent, I'm wondering, where do I even start with that? I have I don't know how old my kids are. I have an 11-year-old, a 9-year-old, and a 7-year-old.
Yeah.
So where do we even start regarding active shooter conversations at the dinner table?
Well, you know, the first place you start with your kids is you have a simple question of, hey, what do you do when the guy walks up to you with a puppy and says, would you like to have a puppy? I have one in my car. What does your kid do with that information? Well, before training, my grandbabies were saying I would want to go see the puppy. And I'm like, okay, well, that's the wrong answer. And we walk through that. Well, now they know what to do with that, because parents are not having those simple conversations with their kids. Right now is a great time. It's Halloween. Mm-hmm. Our kids are going to be out on the street. And so what are they doing to protect themselves, whether it be just having something as simple as carrying a flashlight, or they're staying with a group, or they're not running ahead, all of those kinds of things. You know, as parents, we were really concerned that our kids don't play in the street, and whenever I was growing up, it was be in your yard before dark. Now we have to think about these other things of what happens if a vehicle's driving really slow beside your family and your kids are out. You know, you have to be that, and I think that women do a better job of it than men, as a matter of fact, because you have that parental instinct that says, the hair on the back of my neck is rising up, there's something wrong in this scenario. And so I have to tell you that women do a good job of that. But you have to have it out in the forefront. You have to have those conversations with your kids.
And it's not it doesn't hurt to just have a 2 or 3 minute conversation. you know, at the dinner table, you know, or whatever, you know, sitting around before the TV shows or whatever, kids doing their homework. And it may be something as, hey, what'd you do at school today? And kind of, you know, I remember that was a question my mom asked me a lot. So what'd you do at school today? Nothing. Well, what do you mean nothing? And then she, because I didn't know how to communicate.
Right.
And so it's just open that line of communication with your kids. And just, you know, like Tracy said, you can be in, when you take your kids grocery shopping, do all three of them go with you? You're probably constantly looking around where they're at while you're trying to buy groceries. And so it's you're watching. And so that doesn't mean somebody else isn't watching too.
Well, I think a reality is that we have to remember that our kids don't know what they don't know.
Right.
So does your kids know what a weapon looks like? Do they know what a rifle looks like or a pistol looks like? And do they know the difference between a fake gun and a real gun and a BB gun and a real gun? And you know, my kids did. I was a police officer, and it was vitally important for me that they understood what that looked like, because I didn't want them to be at a neighbor's house or a friend's house and come across a weapon and think it's a toy. So my kids knew what the difference was. But how many kids doesn't know what a weapon looks like? There's a lot of them. There's a lot of our kids don't know the difference between a straight screwdriver and a Phillips screwdriver. You know, so they surely don't know what a rifle looks like and what a pistol looks like. So how could they be expected to report suspicious activity if they don't know what they're looking for?
Right.
So we have to have those conversations with our kids. And I don't expect you to go and buy a rifle to show your kids what that looks like. But what I would expect is that with everything that's on the media, that you could surely say, this is what a rifle looks like. That mm-hmm. should never be in a school.
Right.
And if you see that, you should report it immediately.
And how do you report it? Is there a way that you can do it anonymously?
Because some people
might be scared to go to the police department because they may be wrong. Or
you can call 911. Yeah. I mean, if you call 911, it may or may not be anonymous, because that, you know, that still may come up on a caller ID. But at the end of the day, what's more important? Is it more important to get the help there and check out that critical incident, or is it important to stay anonymous? Yeah. Now, we get anonymous calls through 911, and they may come from a landline. And a person says, hey, I want to stay anonymous. And we're going to respond to those calls, because the most important thing is to make sure that people are safe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's so many other aspects of school safety that we want to get to. One of the questions I have is, how do schools and law enforcement crack down on the use of distribution of prescription and illegal drugs on campuses?
You know, one of the things, and I find some wood to knock on here, prescription drugs haven't been a big issue. Right now, our biggest issue is kids and vaping. I don't know if you're following the media, but
yes.
Kids will have these vape, and they'll what they're doing is they're finding places to buy the little vials that go in there,
mm-hmm.
and they're laced with THC. And so the kids are vaping, they're getting that in their system, and they're getting high, as you can say,
mm-hmm.
and it's dangerous. And so that's one of our biggest issues right now. And, you know, the state just passed it. It's 21 now for kids to even have it. But what we're finding is when we get a student, we'll test it to see if it's just the normal nicotine part, or we test it to see if it's got THC in it.
Mm-hmm.
And the beginning, or last year, we were finding about 90% of them, they contained THC in them.
Wow.
And so we had to start looking at better ways to address that. And not only we, the state of Texas, and I believe it's really becoming a thing nationwide now. And so that's one of the areas that we really are trying to concentrate on right now,
mm-hmm.
and work with our administrators and our community.
Yeah, I think the same can be said about CBD oil, where less than 0.3% is legal to sell CBD oil. But the reality is what is the real THC concentration to that, and what is what is history and testing told us about THC? Well, at the end of the day, THC is still dangerous for especially our kids and our adults, and there's no telling how much THC is really in a vial of CBD oil that you would buy.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a real threat. You know, the other item that I'd like to discuss is the, you'd mentioned prescription drugs. You know, so many people don't realize that sharing a prescription drug is illegal. It's a felony.
Yes.
And we see that a lot. We see that someone's got a toothache and someone, mom or dad's got a pain pill, and they give it to the kid, and then all of a sudden they've introduced that to the kid. So not only have they introduced that, but now all of a sudden they think that the kid has thought, okay, I think this is okay because mom has told me that we can do it.
Mm-hmm.
But those prescriptions are for that individual, and they're not a family prescription. They're for that individual. And
family prescription.
It doesn't say family on the prescription bottle anywhere. But
it doesn't say the Bailey family on there, or the Womack family, or the Aaron family.
But I can tell you that there is prescription drugs that are very valuable on the street, and whenever they pull them out of the bottle and put them in a Ziploc baggie and take them to school, it's a felony. It's going to change your life and in a very negative way. And you know, That criminal history never goes away, and that's what we try to communicate to especially our school kids, is that whenever you get in that kind of trouble, it's going to follow you for the rest of your life. And do you want to explain that for the rest of your life? And I think the answer is no.
Yeah, and so I want to emphasize what you just said, because when I was researching for the show, I did not realize that, especially in Texas, apparently we have some pretty strict laws about carrying your prescription medication mm-hmm. outside of the bottle. So talk just a little bit more about that. You know, what could happen if you do, like, you know, if you bring your Adderall, which is a Schedule II drug that is on the same schedule as, I think, heroin and... Some other very illegal and dangerous substances. So,
you know, it's very true. If you get pulled over and you happen to have your Adderall in a Ziploc baggie laying on the front seat,
that's for ADHD.
Yeah, yeah. But how does the police officer know that? He doesn't realize that you've been diagnosed with that, and so all of a sudden you have an illegal drug that's not in the appropriate bottle. And so, you know, it's not only about having the drug in the appropriate bottle, it's also having the count, the actual quantity of pills to match what the bottle says. So if it was prescribed on a particular date and it was one per day, you should have X number of pills left. And if you don't, then there's a topic of conversation that you're going to have. So how do you defend that? Well, it's tough to defend that on the side of the road at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And so you don't want to put yourself in that position. It is an arrestable offense? Absolutely. Yeah, you could be arrested for that. And at the end of the day, you would have to prove that you did, in fact, have a prescription for that. You know, a police officer on the side of the road is going to make every effort possible to avoid that, because they don't want to do that. What they want to do is really determine what is going on with this drug that's in your car.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was just going to back on the part of when it comes to school, if a student has a prescription medication, then the parent needs to make sure that the school is aware. And like at our elementary schools, for example, say your child's on a medication, and the parent brings the medication, then the nurse will secure it and make it available to the student as whatever's prescribed by, you know, whatever the doctor and the parent have, you know, said, okay, they need to take it here. And mm-hmm. at this time,
mm-hmm.
Having prescription medication, if it's for, you know, for the student, is important that they take it. So there's steps administratively at a school that the parents need to go through about making sure that their child has that medication.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things that you should note that is, if you have too much of it, there can be you can be charged with intent to distribute, because.
Sure. I wasn't going to go in that much detail, but now, yours into several Ziploc baggies, that's a problem.
Yeah,
that is a big problem.
But that could absolutely happen. And also, one thing I didn't realize is that you can't have your medication in a pill box.
Right.
You know, you've got the Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday pill box outside of your home.
Sure.
If it's just in your car or in your backpack, which could absolutely happen, then that's an offense.
Yeah. A great public service announcement is that you can keep those in that pill box, but you better take your prescription meds with you as well, so the prescriptions are in close proximity with those.
The bottle that has the information on it with your name.
Absolutely, with your name.
Not your dad's name.
Not your dad's name. Because we have seen that happen before. And, you know, people are so confused about that. They say, wait a second, this is not a big deal. Yeah, it's a felony. It's a big deal.
Yeah. So that, you know, schedule two drugs, just so you know, a little PSA, Vicodin, Ritalin, Adderall. They have a high potential for abuse and for severe psychological and physical dependence, which is why they take it so seriously.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of the things I'd like to know is about bullying, because that's another serious safety issue. Every state has passed anti-bullying laws mandating how districts prevent and deal with bullying. In what ways are local police departments and district police departments involved in cases of bullying, or is this solely the responsibility of the schools?
You want to start me? You want me to start?
Yeah,
okay. I was trying to get him to start one for a change instead of
me. Right ahead, sir.
You know, bullying prevention, it's very important. And I'll give an example, personal. My daughter, I always worried about her being bullied when she was in school. My daughter is, when she was in the seventh grade, she was like 5'10". And so she was always taller than all the kids around her, and she's always been slender. And so I always worried about bullying, and it was something that I talked to her, you know, you want to make sure. And so one of the things but bullying is an issue. It happens on a regular basis. We try to educate our staff on the signs of students that are being bullied. We have a program. All the teachers and in fact every school district employee is required to take it. It's called Safe Schools, and bullying is a big part of that Safe School training. And so and then we just try to work with the individual, you know, the schools. You can go to our website, the MISD website. You'll find there's sections on bullying there that parents can look at. We have anonymous, you can make an anonymous tip if a person's being bullied, and it'll be investigated thoroughly. And so bullying, because what we found, bullying leads to other issues.
Right.
And so you want to try to stop it before it gets started. And if it gets started, you want to stop it as quick as you can before it escalates.
And when does bullying actually become a crime?
You know, the new laws like cyberbullying, and it depends on what's involved. And, you know, me is making fun of Tracy, you know, because he's short and never mind. I'll stop there. But that's, you know, bullying. He and I bully each other. That's not necessarily a crime. It's when you go further than that, and there's threats involved, or there's other incidences involved, hazing type things like that, is when it and cyberbullying's becoming a, you know, where kids go, we go back to the social media, and so that's when things are starting to kick in. And
right.
There is some new legislation out there.
Yeah, the reality is it's something that you have to get ahead of. I mean, it's something you have to pay close attention to what is happening with that, because what you're looking for is signs of where that's going next, because you want to intervene before that goes anywhere else. And so, you know, I would encourage parents and obviously students that the minute that they either witness it or they feel like that they're the subject of it, that they report that at the very minimum a counselor, in the schools so that we can get ahead of something like that.
Yeah, all our counselors are very well trained in working with students on bullying issues. And then, and we also have a tracking system now. It's part of the state law. When I say we, the police department does it. It's our school services, student services department, and they track all bullying incidences and make sure they're properly investigated. And so we work with the student services division quite a bit about those.
I think there's some confusion with children about when bullying goes from teasing to actual bullying. And so I did want to read the definition, at least here in Texas. Texas defines bullying as any written, verbal, or physical act that physically harms a student or damages a student's property or that creates an intimidating, threatening, or abusive educational environment, exploits an imbalance of power materially, and substantially disrupts the education process, threat of harm, or fear of the student's person or property. So the couple of things that I noticed in there is physical harm, intimidation,
right,
threaten, and imbalance of power. And also it's something that is repeated. It's not just, you know, my friend keeps telling me that I'm bad at basketball, which I hear a lot at in my home.
Well, I'm bad at basketball too, but I'm vertically challenged with that. But you know, I think the reality is the definition is complicated, but in reality it is, how do you perceive what's happening?
Right.
And if you perceive that you're being bullied, then you're probably being bullied, and you need to work through that issue and immediately make notification to a counselor or the police department so that we can investigate it.
In regards to cyberbullying, it says that it's the willful and repeated harm inflicted through the use of computers, cell phones, and other electronic devices. And that actually is a criminal act.
Sure.
And it, you know, can go into stalking, coercion, sexually explicit images, and things like that. Actually, here in the Metroplex, there were a couple of middle school kids that took a picture of a special needs child using the bathroom and posted it online. They didn't realize, you know, they're kids. You know, they didn't realize, A, they're bullying, and B, they committed a crime by doing that.
Yeah.
So I love that you said that we've got to have those conversations with our kids and make sure that they understand what the lines are that they shouldn't cross. We need to start with kindness and, you know, just educating our kids and supporting the things that they're learning at school so that they can be knowledgeable and realize that, you know, sometimes the things that we take not so seriously are actually really serious.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, thank you guys so much. This was a very interesting conversation, and I know that a lot of parents were helped by it. It went fast, didn't it?
It did.
You have a look on your face like, I can't believe we're already done.
And you gave me so many more questions.
I like to over-repair. So anyway, thank you guys so much for joining us.
Thank you for what you're doing. You're making an impact in our community, so thank you for doing that.
It's my pleasure.
I enjoyed it thoroughly. Hope to do it again.
All right. So we always want to let you guys know what's going on with Noggin at the end of our show. So we wanted to let you know that we won. School Days won the 2019 Best Blue Bowl Show of the Year. It truly was an honor just to be nominated because our show is really not that not even a year old yet. It really is a blessing to have some of the amazing guests that we've had on come and invest in our listeners and provide valuable information, tools, and resources. It really does mean a lot to us. So thank you for voting, and most of all, thank you guys so much for listening. We always want to let you know that you can go to Facebook and Instagram page, our Facebook and Instagram pages at Noggin Foundation. That's N-O-G-G-I-N Foundation. And you can do that to check out pictures of the night David and I actually clean up pretty well.
Nice.
We also wanted to let you know about a really cool offer for our School Days listeners. Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. So what you can do to take advantage of that is go to audibletrial.com/schooldazedshow to get your free audiobook and start your trial. Next week, we'll sit down with Mariam McGregor, award-winning author of the Everyday Leadership Curriculum, to discuss developing leadership skills in your children. She travels nationally offering program design workshops and training with schools, agencies, and communities, emphasizing the development of youth leadership programming and educational efforts. So make sure you share that with your parent friends about next week. As always, head to our website, schooldayshow.com, for more information. And remember, you don't ever have to miss a show. Find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Play Music, and pretty much anywhere that you listen to your favorite podcasts. And don't forget to follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Noggin Foundation. Again, that's N-O-G-G-I-N. And do you, YouTube, you can find episodes of School Days and other videos featuring the fun educational programs we offer on our YouTube channels. Just search for Noggin Educational Foundation. And last but not least, we always want to end our show by saying that David and I are parenting by grace. We depend on God to give us the strength that we need and the wisdom that we need to raise our kids into flourishing adults. And if you'd like to know more about that, feel free to email me at info@schooldaysshow.com. Also want to say happy birthday, Dad. Today is his 74th birthday.
Happy birthday.
That's
happy
right.
Happy birthday.
Y'all have a great week.
School Days is sponsored by Noggin Educational Foundation. At Noggin, we provide free educational resources to students from low-income families and support to their parents, like the preceding broadcast. School Days is made possible by the generosity of listeners just like you. Please consider donating to Noggin at Noggin, N-O-G-G-I-N, foundation.org.